Tonino Norival. That will help keep the sea calm. Guard. They say the wind will come up. Tonino Norival. Yes, well, I feel like a vigorous sail. Second guard. You look uncommonly happy, Dr. Passerino. Tonino Norival. I think I have met the love of my life. Guard. That will do it. Tonino Norival. Yes, I doubt I will ever love anyone else. Third guard, inside gate. Ah, to be in love, to be young and in love. You look so happy, Dr. Passerino. Guard. But if you go sailing now, you will be missing the parties, the grand balls. How can there be carnival parties without the tap dancers? Orlando. No, only Norival is going sailing, because he is so stuck in love, you see. We came just to see him off. We will swim ashore, off Copacabana. Second guard. I understand everything perfectly. He is in love. From the stiff way he walks, I should say he should not be with the young lady just now. Guard. Is that it? Ah, I see. So, Dr. Passerino, even though it is the middle of the night during carnival, goes sailing. Third guard. What a man! Guard. What a gentleman! Tonino Norival. Something like that. Guard. Norival Passerino must do what is best for himself and his young lady. He signaled the guard inside to open the gate. What consideration! Orlando and Tonino marched Norival through the gate. True, Norival did walk as if he suffered one of the more virulent social diseases. Fletch fell in behind them. Tonino Norival. Obrigado. Buona notte. Aboard, Orlando removed the sail covers and had the mainsail up in almost no time at all. Tonino released the bowline and gathered it in. As soon as the mainsail caught wind, Fletch, at the tiller, released the stern line and, letting it trail in the water, took in the main sheet. Facing aft in the cockpit, Norival beamed delightedly at his friends taking him sailing. While Orlando was running up the jib, Tonino came aft and took the tiller. I know the harbor, he said. We do not want to run into someone's boat in the dark while one of us is dead. Fletch gathered in the stern line. Not in the SS Coitus Interruptus. The moon came out. In the moonlight, Norival's whole face beamed, but when the boat heeled, he fell over sideways. Can't have him rolling around, Tonino said. He might go overboard before we mean him to. Fletch relieved Norival of his rope harness and the broomsticks and set him up in the leeward corner of the cockpit. He tied a light line around his shoulders to a stanchion behind him. The things we do for our friends, Tonino muttered, coming about. Now Norival was sitting to windward, leaning unnaturally forward as if being seasick, but he was still beaming. Orlando joined them in the cockpit. Laughing, then, they translated the conversation with the guards for Fletch. What a gentleman! Orlando kept repeating. Then Orlando said, Norival loved this little boat. At the tiller, Tonino said, Who'd think Norival would be one to go down with his ship? Orlando laughed. What a gentleman! We're just about there, Tonino said. Ashore, as they came around a point, a car's headlights went on and off three times. Yes, Tonino said. There's Tito. He must see us. At first, sailing south in Bahia de Guanabara, Fletch had tried to sleep. He lay on the deck, a cushion under his head. He regretted leaving the rest of his mineral water in the car. Despite the drinks he had had, sleep was impossible. The sky was clear now. The breeze was from the northeast and steady. The little sloop moved nicely through the water. To starboard, Cidade Maravillosa, Rio de Janeiro, passed slowly, laid out under the moonlight. There were a few fires on the beach. The street lights, the lights in the tall apartment buildings and hotels along the shore, dimmed the stars above. From offshore, the samba drums were heard from all parts of the city in a soft jumble. Like no other city Fletch had seen from such a perspective, Rio has peculiar black holes in its middle, the sides of its cliffs. Morros de Babilonia, de São João, Des Cabritos, Pedra dos Dois Irmãos. Its surprising, irrepressible jungle growth within the city. Above all in the moonlight, arms out in forgiveness, stood the statue of Christ the Redeemer. At some point, sitting in the cockpit opposite Norival, Orlando had said, "We will have to go to Canecao Ball." "Yes," Tonino said, "however late." "We will have to find the Passerinos," Orlando said, "and say that Norival went sailing." "Janio, you must stay with us so we will be believed." "I should return to the Yellow Parrot." "No, no, there will be no time. You come to my apartment. You can wear my costume from last year. We are the same size." "I seem to be the same size as everybody," Fletch said. "Alan Stanwyck, Janio Barreto, Tonino Braga." "Tito will drive fast and we will dress and go in a hurry." "The tickets Teo gave me for the baller at the Yellow Parrot." "You can use Norival's. He won't be needing it." They sailed another few kilometers. Ashore, again Tito flashed his headlights 3 times. "All right." Tonino punched Fletch's leg. "Take the tiller, Señor Barreto. It is no surprise to us you know how to run a boat. Orlando, assist Norival. Make sure he has his wallet in his pocket." "He has his wallet." "His death would never be reported unless they know who he is. Whoever finds a Passerino body will expect money for reporting it." Fletch sat, tiller in hand, keeping the course along the shore. Tonino went below. Soon from the small cabin came a heavy pounding, then a splintering sound, then gurgling. The boat veered to port. Instantly it became unmanageable. The sails luffed. Fletch released the tiller. Tonino came up the companionway and tossed a hammer overboard. "We are near enough the rock for people to believe he hit it," Tonino said. "And now for Norival." Together, Tonino and Orlando lifted Norival, his eyes still beaming happily in the moonlight, brought him over to the gunwale. Gently, they dropped him overboard. For a moment, the 2 young men stood on the deck, staring down into the water. Tonino's lips moved. Orlando crossed himself. "He'll be on the beach by dawn," Tonino said. The little boat first had come about, put its nose up into the wind, both sails luffing. Then the bow began to sink. As it did so, it fell off the wind, the sails filled again, and, twisting, it began to capsize. "Come, Janio," Tonino shouted. "You don't want to keep dying at your age." Orlando dove overboard. Only after Fletch dove did Tonino scramble off the sinking boat. The water was exactly body temperature, as was the air. In irrepressible, sensuous delight, Fletch stroked through the buoyant water towards Cidade Maravillosa. The wads of money in the pockets of his shorts came to feel like stones in the water. After 100 meters, he stopped swimming. He looked around to see if anything of the boat was still visible. He could not be sure. There was something white on the water, possibly the side of the hull, possibly the sails. Then from near the boat came a loud yell. "Ah!" Water was thrashed. "Tonino," Fletch called. "What's the matter?" Silence. "Tonino, what happened?" Fletch was just starting to swim back when Tonino's steady voice came calmly across the water surface. "I swam into Norival." Chapter 17. "We must be very casual," said Tito, now a movie Indian. They were entering the Canecao nightclub. "What is the number of the Passerino box?" Orlando asked. "They're always in box 3, Tonino answered. "Da Costa is in box 9, Fletch answered. Relieved of the corpse, Tito drove the black 4-door Galaxy back to Copacabana fast enough to satisfy any police. In the car, Fletch gulped down the rest of his liter of water. At Tonino's apartment on Rua Figueiredo Magalhães, Tonino, Tito, Orlando, and Fletch shaved and showered in assembly line fashion. The tap dancers were to dress as movie Indians in breech clouts, soft thigh-high boots, and war paint. Norival's breech clout did not fit Fletch unless he wanted to spend the rest of the night holding it up with his hand. Donino dug his last year's costume out of a closet and tossed it to Fletch. A one-piece shiny satin movie cowboy suit, complete with mask, frayed leggings, and spangles. Fletch wriggled into it. Donino, this is a scuba suit? It fits you perfectly. Here are the boots, the hat, the mask. It fits like a scuba suit. Donino, Tito, and Orlando then sat in a circle decorating each other's faces, chests, backs, with movie war paint, with great speed. Finished, they looked as if they had already sweated through a war. While they were doing that, Fletch decorated Tonino's apartment by draping wet cruceros every conceivable place to dry. Remember, Tito said, very casual. At Canecao nightclub, Orlando opened the door to the Passerino box. Orlando, people exclaimed. Tito, Tonino. The people in the box just stared at the masked movie cowboy. Below them, the huge floor of the Canecao nightclub was jammed with people in bright costumes at little tables, on the dance floor, wandering around. Across the hall on the large stage was an enormous band, mostly of samba drums, but of horns and electric guitars as well. Everyone in the Passerino box made much of the tap dancers' costumes. As there wasn't much to the costumes, in fact they were making much of the tap dancers. In turn, Tonino, Orlando, Tito exercised the courtesy of not knowing who people were and expressing great surprise when, for example, Harlequin revealed himself to be Admiral Passerino. You're very late. Oh, Tonino equivocated. We just found the box. Who's this? A woman asked. Gianno Barreto, Tonino muttered. I am Fletcher. Signor Passerino was dressed as Papa Noel. Where's Norival? He went sailing, Tito said. Sailing? It is storming out. The storm is over, Orlando said. Sailing? On the night of the Canecao ball? We saw him off, Tonino said. Fletch did too. Sailing? Why would he go sailing the night of the Canecao ball? With apparent concern, Tonino said, Norival has been acting very serious lately. He has been talking of taking up a career, Orlando said. That would be nice, said Papa Noel. It is a question of what he does best, Tito said. Norival has his talents, Orlando said. Donino said, perhaps he wanted to think. Norival becoming serious? Asked Harlequin. Then it is time for me to retire. No, no, Tonino said. You don't know Norival as we do. When Norival sets his mind to something, he is apt to die trying. Norival can be very sincere, Orlando said, about some things. Yes, accented by war paint, Tonino's eyes crossed. Norival is one to die trying. Norival is not coming to the ball at all? Harlequin asked. He went sailing, Tonino said lamely, to come to some conclusion. Ah, what a son, Papa Noel said. Probably drunk somewhere. These tickets cost 300 North American dollars each. Norival, Adroaldo, why does a man have sons? As soon as they grow as big as he is, they ignore him. They take but do not give. Fletch was introduced to Senora Passerino, who sat aside, watching the dancers on the floor. A lady with mild, vague eyes, she was dressed as a circus clown. Ah, she said, Norival went sailing. Of course. He never was one for parties. A quiet, sensitive boy, always. He wrote poetry, you know, when he was younger. I remember one poem of his, where the cockatoo bird was meant to represent his school principal. You see, Tito said aside to Fletch, we could not disappoint that lady with the truth. Clearly, it would kill her.
Have a drink, ordered Harlequin.
Cachaça? Tonino grinned broadly. The worst was over.
Now, senor, we must go find girls.
Of course you must, boomed Papai Noel. The knight is as young as you.
Just make sure they're not men disguised surgically, Harlequin warned.
If I find someone special, I shall bring her to you, Tonino said, to check out.
Harlequin roared in laughter.
Outside the box, Fletch said, Tonino, are you going back to the beach in the morning to make sure Norival came ashore?
Oh, no.
Tonino adjusted the top of his boot against the bare calf of his leg.
Today is Sunday. We must go to Mass.
Teodomiro da Costa was standing at the little bar at the back of his box.
Who is this? He exclaimed. I don't recognize you.
Fletch stared at him the appropriate time through his mask. Everyone else in the box was facing forward, listening intently to the singer of the moment. What was left of the tap dancers had gone looking for girls.
You scare me, Senor Gunslinger. What do you want?
It's me, Teo.
Who?
Teo leaned forward, staring through the eye holes of Fletch's mask.
Fletch!
Ah! Teo feigned a look of great relief.
Then come have a drink.
The barman Teo had brought from his house began to make Fletch a screwdriver.
It's so late, Teo said. It is nearly 3 o'clock in the morning. Did you fall asleep?
No.
I thought not.
Without Laura, I went for a tour of the suburbs. Got back late.
In a bus?
Something like that. A big car. The singer stopped singing.
Oh, Fletch, beautiful costume, the Viana woman said. Where did you get it?
I mugged someone on my television set.
It fits you,
she looked below his waist,
handsomely.
Frankly, I feel like I'm walking behind myself.
You are, darling, you are.
Teo introduced Fletch to his other guests. Besides the Vianas and the Da Silvas, there was a famous Brazilian soccer player who could not stop dancing around the box by himself. His wife, who was taller than he and probably heavier, a broker and his wife from London, who put on their Wegman Man Ray masks for Fletch. Adrian Fawcett, who wrote about music for the New York Times. An Italian racing car driver and his girlfriend, who was very young indeed. And the young French film star, Jetta. Everyone marveled at Fletch's costume, and he at everyone's. Teo was dressed somewhat as a tiger with a short tail. His tiger head rested on the bar table. Staring unblinkingly through glass eyes, the tiger head reminded Fletch somewhat of Norival in his last moment. But Norival's eyes were much happier. Jetta was dressed in a nurse's cap and costume, white shoes. Her nurse's skirt was not even as long as the tap dancer's breech clouts. In films, he had seen more of Jetta. Fletch took off his mask and movie cowboy hat and stood at the rail and watched the swirl of color and flesh below him. A few of the drummers were going off the stage, others were coming on. The music would never stop. At three places on the huge floor, between the dancing areas and the tables, were tall raised gilded cages. Inside, three or four magnificent women dressed only in G-strings and tall headgear writhed to the music. Outside, crawling around the cages, trying to attain sufficient footholds in their high-heeled shoes to writhe to the music, 9 or 10 women dressed in G-strings and tall headgear crawled around like big cats on their hind legs. Each of the gilded cages was a locus of writhing brown bear asses and huge, shaking brown bear breasts. Beside him, Teo said,
"The floors of the cages are elevators. They go up and down so the women can get in and out without being accosted by the crowd."
"They must be 7 feet tall," Fletch said.
"They are all over 6 feet."
"What about the women outside the cages?"
"They are not women." Teo sipped his drink.
"They are,"
Teo said.
"They are exhibiting the superb work of their Brazilian surgeons."
From a distance, Fletch could see no difference between the women inside the cages and the women outside the cages. Once before in New York, he had been fooled.
"No one hardly ever accosts them," Teo said. "Very sad for them."
The music picked up, and all the people, those dancing, those at the tables, those in the boxes, began singing, chanting the song presented by Imperio Serrano, that carnival. Fletch stumbled over the lyrics. He could never make his Portuguese sibilant enough. All the tanned people, the brown people, the black people, were moving to the rhythm and singing the lyrics of the song presented by a single samba school together, something about how indebted Brazilian people are to the coffee bean, and how they should respect the coffee bean like an uncle. Adrian Fawcett, drink in hand, stood at the rail to Fletcher's left.
Brazil is what the United States would like to think it is.
I used to work for a newspaper, Fletch said, a reporter.
What do you do now?
Do?
What must I do? I am.
Jetta stood the other side of Fletch. After Ava, after watching the women in the gilded cages, Jetta off the screen seemed small.
Really, what do you do? Adrian asked.
Fletch said, I don't know.
Jetta said, Theo said there would be someone young for me to dance with.
I feel 100 years old at the moment.
I have heard that story, she said. You are someone who died years ago, murdered, and has come back to life to reveal your murderer.
Did you ever hear anything so crazy?
Yes, she said. Will you dance?
Fletch wanted to crawl into a corner of the box to sleep. He was sure he could do so, despite the drums, the horns, the guitars, the singing.
Of course.
Excusing themselves from the box, they went to the dance floor. The people swirling around them were dressed as rabbits and rodents, harlequins and harlots, grand dames and play-school children, villains and viscounts, convicts and cooks, pirates and priests. Surprising to Fletch, Jetta seemed a wooden dancer. She clung to Fletch as she might to a log in the middle of the sea. He suspected she resisted such music. A few meters away, Orlando, breech-clout flapping, was dancing wildly with a woman in a blonde wig. The concentration in his eyes as he danced put him in another world. The woman's dress exposed only one breast totally. At the edge of the dance floor, a dozen men stood absolutely still, staring up, their mouths agape. Above them was a woman sitting on the rail of a box, her bare buttocks hanging over the rail. The woman herself was not visible, just her bare buttocks hanging over the rail. Jetta followed Fletch's gaze.
Brazilians are so relaxed about their bodies, said the young French film star. So practical.
Feeling almost intoxicated with sleeplessness, Fletch envisioned Tito and Tonino turning Norival upside down in the bushes, kicking the vomit out of his stomach. Tito and Orlando, naked, kick-dancing, then wrestling, laughing, on the burned-out grass. The magnificent Ava, standing in the door of the small dark room where Norival lay dead, clutching her left breast with both hands, looking mildly pleased with herself. Harness and broomsticks and calculating where a corpse dropped into the tide would be by dawn. Jetta ran her hands up the smooth sleeves of Fletcher's shirt to his shoulders and said,
You were so late in coming.
Even though dancing, sleep passed through Fletcher's brain like a curtain dragging across a stage. I had to sit up a sick friend. Chapter 18. Alone in his room at the Hotel Yellow Parrot, Fletch first dialed the Hotel Jangada and asked for room 912. There was no answer in room 912. Not even taking off his movie cowboy suit, he fell on his bed. He thought he would sleep immediately. It was nearly 7 o'clock in the morning. He was not used to going to sleep at 7 o'clock in the morning. Getting up, he dropped his clothes on the floor, then he crawled beneath the sheet. Even at that hour of the bright morning, the sound of a samba combo could be heard from somewhere in the street. He rolled onto his side and pulled the pillow over his ear. Eyes closed, flesh wavered everywhere in his mind. Big, soft, pliant breasts with huge nipples swinging to the beat. Long, smooth backs danced away from him. Brown buttocks dimpled as they moved. Gorgeous long legs bent and straightened as feet pressed gently against the earth, the dance floor, in the rhythm of the melodic samba drums. Fletch got out of bed and called room service for breakfast. While he waited, he took a long hot shower. Alone, a towel around his waist, he ate breakfast sitting in a corner of his room. Sunday morning. For once, the man across the utility area was not painting the room. He called the Hotel Jangada again, again asked for Mrs. Joan Stanwyck in room 912. Again, there was no answer. He closed the drapes against the bright morning and got into bed. He tried lying like a statue on a crypt, like Norival, dead on the bed at the old plantation house, flat on his back, his hands crossed on his stomach. He tried counting the members of a woman's pole-vaulting team leaping over the barrier. At the 19th redhead taking her turn with the brunettes and blondes going over the barrier, he knew sleep was unattainable. He called the Hotel Jangada again. Heavily slogging around the room, he opened the window drapes. He pulled on clean shorts, a clean tennis shirt, socks, and sneakers. Outside the hotel, in the brilliant sunlight, the small boy, Idalina's great-grandson, Gianni Barreto, was waiting for him. The boy grabbed Fletch's arm. He hobbled along with Fletch, speaking rapidly, softly, insistently. Fletch shook the boy off and got into his MP. On his wooden leg, the 10-year-old Gianni Barreto ran after Fletch's car, calling to him. Chapter 19. Bom dia, Fletch said to the formally dressed desk clerk at the Hotel Jangada. There is a problem. Instantly, the man was solicitous. He put his forearms on the reception counter and folded his hands. Are you a guest of this hotel? I'm staying at the Hotel Yellow Parrot. The desk clerk was only a little less solicitous. The Hotel Yellow Parrot was a good hotel, too, more traditional, not so flashy. All the good hotels in Rio de Janeiro exactly doubled their rates during Carnival. Fletch had already telephoned room 912 on the house phone, gone to the door, checked out the breakfast and pool areas. No sign of Joan Collins Stanwyck. The note he had left for her was still in the room 912 box behind the reception desk. He spoke slowly and distinctly. Someone who was staying at your hotel, a North American woman named Mrs. Joan Stanwyck, talked to me yesterday morning at about this time at my hotel. We arranged to meet almost immediately here for breakfast. She was to walk from there to here. All I had to do was get something from the safe of the Hotel Yellow Parrot, shower, change clothes, I had been jogging, and follow her in my car. I left the Hotel Yellow Parrot about a half hour after her and drove straight here. She did not answer the house phone. She did not answer when I knocked on her door. She was not in the breakfast room, the terraces, the swimming pool areas, the bar. She still doesn't answer. I'm afraid something must have happened to her. The desk clerk smiled faintly at the story of a jilted lover.
There is nothing we can do, senor. We must respect the privacy of our guests. If the lady does not wish to see you or hear from you?
Raising his hands from the counter, he shrugged.
But you see, she needs something from me. Money. She had been robbed of everything.
Again, the man shrugged.
I left her a note.
Fletch pointed to the note still in its slot behind the man.
The note is still there.
People change their plans rapidly in Rio during Carnival.
The man smiled.
Sometimes they change their whole characters.
Will you let me into a room, please?
Fletch had already tried to jimmy the lock to room 912. It was an advanced lock, designed for only the most advanced burglars.
I worry that something must have happened to her. She may need help.